Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wombat Radio. We're in Brisbane. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Sarah Scott, but I'm more commonly known as Sezzo Snot or DJ Sezzo Snot. And I'm a DJ and I'm also known for twerking.
Right. I was speaking to Ausdance Queensland before and talking about that we were about to have a discussion, and that's pretty much how I summed you up as well. Only because that's the only context I've seen you in.
Yeah.
And in what other context do you do this in?
So I play in clubs. I do radio at 4ZZZ. So I have underground hip hop show where I play a lot of music from female hip hop artists because I think they go ignored a lot, especially in the underground. There's a lot of male underground artists, but a lot of the females get ignored, and a lot of rappers from the queer community as well. And 4ZZZ is all about representing the marginalized. So that's like, I'm looking at hip hop and trying to stay in line with that ethos of the station, and that's how I do it. And what else? And I also throw parties, and the parties that I throw are really inclusive, and we like to keep our music inclusive as well. So we'll play music from lots of different types of genres, and there's no hierarchy or superiority. So there's no snobbery towards pop. Like, you know, Britney Spears can be really fun because you heard it when you were young, and she's, you know, I just don't think you should be a snob about that. You should just be free and enjoy it. But you can also acknowledge that, you know, there's some really good stuff going on with other types of dance music and Vogue and techno and grime, and we can mix that in as well.
Wow.
So I'm all about like no boundaries.
Awesome.
And freedom. And true enjoyment and authenticity.
Yeah. I'm wondering how you know when you hit upon that, or how you know when a track's going to do that, or like what's your gauge?
I guess I'm really into dance music, and I know that people just have this response where they feel like they're going really crazy, and I try and make everything like reach like a kind of crescendo, and then that's when I'll like dance to encourage everyone else to dance, and then I just hope that it just makes them feel really free and they can get out of their bodies and out of their restrictions, and even like, you know, their preconceived idea or identity about themselves, whether that was like an awkward identity or like they were feeling strange about something else that night. And I just want them to forget all of that and escape. And I think that can be really therapeutic.
Yeah, I'm thinking about in movies, how it's the person that has authority or power who remains seated and is quite often still, and it's the people who are without the power that are effortful. And it sounds like what you're facilitating is a complete flip of that, which is to be fully physically engaged, to be embodied, is the most powerful position that you can be in.
Well, because the thing you can have the most power over is yourself. Mm. And so this is like a physical expression of that, of your power. It's like true power.
Mm. Nice.
And there's no control over others.
Yeah.
Because that's just manipulation. It's not power. In my mind.
Yeah.
You're nodding? Yeah.
Definitely. I wonder about also if you have to deal with when you don't feel like dancing, when you feel in inhibited.
I cry. Yeah, but I force myself to. And then I end up enjoying myself. So maybe there's just this like embodied cognition connection thing going on where I dance and then I end up having fun.
Yeah.
And it brings me a lot of meaning to like make people feel good. So, but there is a bit of forced emotion sometimes.
In being super physical?
Just if I'm not into it that night.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you were getting at?
Well, I know, so I've trained and performed as a professional dancer on stages and shit, so I don't have any hang-ups about my own ability and because somehow I've reached a validation where other people have paid to watch it happen.
Yeah.
And yet I go in and out of phases where if I'm asked to dance, I am reluctant. Or in a studio situation, maybe we're developing, I would much rather dance with my eyes closed for a half hour until I then can have my eyes open and be aware of my surroundings and also be aware of my impulse to dance and let it be just as important or heard or powerful. Or so I guess there's something seductive about the mind that somehow quietens the body's needs sometimes. And so that's what I was thinking about. It's just, yes, I want to dance, but sometimes I don't know that I want to dance until I'm dancing.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I'm trying to do to people as well. So I really like charming people into realizing that they want to dance.
Awesome.
And having fun and like connecting with their friends in this different way and connecting with other groups of people that they usually wouldn't.
And does that just happen? Because I know a lot of people would probably just do that by their music selection and then just playing it and having lights and smoke.
Yeah.
But somehow there's something that you...
Like, what's my formula?
Well, you know how some people talk about like really putting all their heart and soul into something or putting skin in the game? Mm. You're like putting your body in front of everybody else and saying, even if you only need to copy, I'll be the one. Or even if you just need to be reminded that no one can look too silly, I'll be the one that does that first.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I'm so happy that you picked up on that.
That's what
that
it felt
comes
like.
Through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I felt like then, I mean, I only saw this at FemPress, but I felt like I had permission to try to move my torso or my pelvis in that relationship.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I was mimicking any particular group or subculture of people that I have no authority to be appropriating from. I felt like you had invited me to groove.
Yes.
And the worst thing I could do is like
just
to not have a go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you just kind of summed it up and I'm really impressed and I don't know what else to add to it.
Well, zoom
I guess
out.
Like, sorry?
I was just going to invite us to zoom out a bit. Like, we can talk about how you select tracks and then how it is that you've come to twerk instead of stomp or backflip.
Yeah.
But also we could zoom out and say, look at what is the cumulative effect of having these gigs over time and engaging different groups of people with this invitation and this facilitation to be embodied. And what do you think that's doing?
Okay.
Or what do you hope that's doing?
I just hope it's making people get rid of needless tradition and needless conservatism.
Wow.
And
do you think they're similar things? They hold hands of each other, tradition and conservatism.
What I just mean is just like needless norms
that must be a
that
hashtag.
Don't have a basis.
needless norms.
Well, that's everything, really.
Yeah.
Because you don't really need norms. A norm is something that you know that you're told you should do.
Mm.
That's like over and above a necessity of everyday life, like of living. You know, it's like a cultural norm.
Yeah.
So culture isn't necessary for life, but it's there.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah. And somehow you're dealing with that?
I'm just trying to tell everyone that it's all arbitrary and, like, you know, it doesn't matter. And, like, if you look at me as sexy, you should, and you know, you respond badly to me twerking or something, you're like, what's she doing? Like, being really slutty, like encouraging everyone else to be slutty. You should think about that and think about, like, why is it bad to be sexy? Alternatively, yeah, even in that sense where people just get out of their bodies and they forget who they are, that's sort of teaching people something like, why were you so restrained before? And why was it difficult for you to dance? And yeah, I don't know. There's like a connection there as well.
Huge,
like,
connection.
Just getting, it's such a stupid movement too. Like, to me, it's really goofy to twerk.
Like the move itself. Yeah.
Actual, like, I'm just repetitively like bouncing my butt up and down nonstop. It's just like boom, 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 but it's actually really funny.
Yeah.
Like if you saw like a jiggly, like something really jiggly, like bobbing up and down repetitively to a beat quickly that wasn't a butt, you'd think it was pretty funny. Like,
definitely.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's that side too where like I love entertaining people, but I also like I don't know, just making them feel a bit lighter, and it's just like, come on, like, this is stupid and it's funny and, you know, you're being stupid and why don't you just get involved and let's all be connected and throw off like the shackles of restraint and society.
Somehow you're being stupid by not being stupid with me.
Yes.
Or if you're going to be stupid, at least be stupid in a fun way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you have a choice to have fun or not.
Yeah. And this, what I'm doing, is not hurting anybody except those of you who are holding on to that it is offensive.
Yeah.
The thing we were talking about before with like gentle messages and sometimes being gentle enough to make change and sometimes being gentle enough to be invisible.
Yeah.
There was an ad campaign on the ABC when I was a child called Life Be In It. And it was, do you remember this one?
I sort of know about it.
And it was just about
being
active.
People making jokes about it, yeah.
And there was a fat white dude who was watching the TV and drinking from a beer can. And his name was Norm. And it never clicked to me.
Amazing stereotype.
Exactly. That this guy's name was Norm. And what we were trying to do is get Norm to be engaged and involved and get out and active in life.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to change Norm.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
And I don't know, I'm pretty cheeky, like, and I like being confrontational a little bit, like not too much. I get away with it because it's a bit goofy and funny. Mm-hmm. And I make sure I express that through like my facial expressions while I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. Or like with what I'm wearing, like I don't really wear like super feminine outfits while I'm DJing. I might wear like shorts or something, but I feel more like a tomboy than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you, can you talk to me about your internet world and life and self?
I guess I got a lot of opinions.
Like from others coming at you and about.
I'm very into plain speaking. Like,
uh-huh.
I come from a philosophical background. I studied philosophy, you know, social theory, anthropology, psychology.
With a major in twerking and DJing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rad. That's on the transcript. Yeah.
I would do that course.
Yeah, you should.
I would audition for that course. I don't know if I would be accepted for that course.
You might not get in.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
And where was that?
Throw those norms off. I did philosophy at Melbourne University. And then I moved here, and I'm doing Bachelor of Psychology. I moved back here for my grandma, who was a big influence in my life, and she wasn't well. So I came back and I thought I'd do something, and I guess not more practical, but more applicable to the current economic environment, like psychology.
Hmm.
So I didn't continue with academic philosophy. But the reason I didn't do that is because I find it can be really abstract. And abstracted from people's everyday realities. No one's going to be interested in this particular topic except for maybe like the 10 people in the world that are able to interpret your paper. Is it really going to help anyone? I'm a big believer in like the practical application of philosophy. Lots of people wouldn't agree with me, and they don't think it's real philosophy. Or they think it's popular philosophy, which is a distinction I reject.
And derogatory distinction.
It is. It doesn't mean anything. No. Just because something is popular doesn't mean it doesn't have worth, number Amen. One. And also, I'm a little bit baffled as to why they think people don't need help and why a bit of rational thinking wouldn't be useful. And that's our specialty.
Yeah.
And I think ethics have been a part of philosophy and forever. And philosophy has frequently adopted a therapeutic tone ever since at least like Boethius's Consolation of Philosophy in like whatever BC. And I just think it's absurd. And so what I'm really into is accessibility without oversimplification. And I think that's what's behind a lot of my Facebook posts. And I also know that people aren't reading long form anymore. So you need to package every... And people are strapped for time. There's so much information out there. It's really important if you want to get a message out, you've got to package it charmingly, number one, or else they won't read it. So it needs to be sort of funny or like in language that they can relate to. And it needs to be short. So it's like aphoristic in nature. I like La Rochefoucauld, the French writer who is famous for his aphorisms. And I think today, like, Twitter is basically like modern day.
It's a platform for aphorisms.
Montaigne, yeah. And La Rochefoucauld. Like, I'm talking about my everyday life and you can relate to it. And that's profound because your everyday daily life makes up your life. And number two, like, you need to package it for modern society. So I don't really write essayistic sort of formats, but I've been thinking about it more, but only I think in an effort to like legitimize myself because people respect that. Yeah.
It's weird, yeah. Huh?
But Facebook is okay for now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm also doing other things.
Other things that we should talk about?
Sort of mainly like just DJing a lot more and been getting asked to do some more art stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Exciting art stuff?
Yeah, it is.
Like on track with your changing the world mission?
I just think if you can leave the world a slightly better place than when you found it, then that's good.
Yeah.
And I think that change takes a really long time. I don't believe in revolutions and because they're very dangerous.
Yeah.
And they can often create like power vacuums that are even more dangerous.
Mm.
So people fight to replace someone in that power vacuum and they usually go for the most aggressive type of person and then that's how you have an autocracy. Anyway, we won't go into that. But
I think
you have to, like, it's like in line with you being gentle.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of similar to what I think, how small changes are made. And I don't know, in some way, hopefully I'm making a small change. Yeah. Change takes a long time. Eras, like eons. And it's like very small changes.
Because it happens generationally? Because like old ideas need to die.
From like Roman times to now, like it's very small changes have occurred.
Yeah, right.
But the world's definitely a safer place than it was.
Hmm.
Like overall, it's a less violent place.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people forget that. I've kind of just gone on a tangent. Sorry.
I think the narrative of it's a more violent place is more prominent than that it's a less violent place.
Yes.
Like... one story is true and one is not, but one is louder and one is not.
Yeah, media.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they want to sell news and people aren't going to read about a sunflower opening today.
It's a shame.
Somehow that news isn't as important as a distant car accident that's occurred that would never affect your life either.
Did you see the moon last night?
I was going to go outside, but then I didn't because I was sad about something.
Was it
beautiful?
It was stunning. And it made me wonder why I had always, in my own mind, perpetuated the sun as a man and the moon as a woman. And this moon is so beautiful. Could I... And then, you know, of course, I did the man thing and appropriated whatever I wanted.
What did you do?
Which is like, oh, I want to be the moon. And the sun, maybe the sun could be a woman, but maybe it doesn't need to be anything and maybe it's on a gradient.
So you were trying to gender the moon and then you wanted it to be a man last night because it was so beautiful.
For some reason, the way that I have grown up, the moon has been the feminine.
Yeah. It's not because of how you've grown up, it's because of culture.
Yeah. The culture I've grown up in.
And it is, sorry.
Like result of our environments. And then, when I saw that it was so lovely, I just thought it was strange. Like it finally, after 30 years of being alive, it hit me that an idea was strange that I had for that long.
Yeah, so it was like, a bit surreal.
Yeah, it's weird that things take that long. Eons.
Yeah, it takes ages for you to question your own assumptions.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to actively try and do it all the time.
How's that going for you?
Throw off the shackles off my feet so I can dance.
I did a dance to that with my sister really? In a church.
Oh, my God.
Because the chorus is praise
you. Was there a gospel
choir? I wish there was a gospel choir.
Yeah.
There was no. It was in Darwin.
I like looking at the moon, though, just to go back.
Yeah.
You know, the Japanese have the moon viewing festival?
No.
Tsukimi, yeah. And they just for one night only, once a year, you like dedicate that night to looking at the moon and thinking about the moon.
Wow.
And like you read poems about the moon to the moon, and it's just lovely. Like honoring the moon's existence, which I think is really cool because I had one of those moments where like you where it was like an aha but duh moment.
Where? So many ahas are actually duh.
Duh. duh. It's an Urban Dictionary.
Great.
I realized that the moon is the same moon that's always been written about by everyone. And I was like, Nietzsche was looking at this moon. This exact moon that I'm staring at, like that physical thing.
Yeah.
It's really special. It connects us.
Yeah.
So it's probably pretty good to reflect on it and it would give you perspective, I'd imagine.
I remember reading about the word lunatic.
Because of women, this association, no?
Not the one I read about, but good jump, maybe.
Is it? No, my etymology is like...
Just that...
Completely...
Lunatic unsound. Used to describe homeless people because they would sleep out under the lunar, under the moon. And that was during a period of time where civilization gradually slept more and more inside until inside sleeping is the norm and anybody who sleeps outside is crazy. And that was sad.
Poor and crazy.
Poor and crazy because being poor is a crime.
Well, back in Freud's time, they thought that hysteria was only a condition that was suffered by poor people until he got... rich, crazy people and started analyzing them and said they have all the symptoms of hysteria.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that was him questioning that.
Do you have something that you're still, like, thought that you're working through that you haven't... There's been no aha-da yet.
I wouldn't know if there was going to be an aha-da until it occurred.
Of course. Is there something, that keeps bugging you, like... A thought keeps returning to you or something that you're working on, not through pen and paper, but just through like consideration?
Probably, why do we act at all? It's like as a fundamental question, like what's the reason for action? Mm. And I have a lot of problems with that and it makes me quite nihilistic at times, even though I thought I'd overcome all of that in like first year philosophy or whatever shit. I'm like, that's a young person's problem.
Nihilism.
Like, I'm not nihilistic anymore. you know, and I'm not hedonistic. I've got a lot of meaning in life, you know, like.
Yeah, right. Maybe this is speaking from a place of ignorance, but I feel like nihilism comes with a liberation.
Yeah.
That things can matter to you because they don't really matter.
Let me think about that.
What nihilism finally forces you to think is that,
like,
hang on.
Why would you be sad that nothing mattered unless something mattered?
Yeah. Okay. Or that you take on that nothing matters, but then you are a living human and you do care about things and things do matter to you.
Mm-hmm.
And to have those two belief systems cohesive means that you need to begin to accept that everything that matters to you comes from a place of arbitrary privilege and importance, and that other people's matters matter to them, even though it doesn't matter to you, and your matters don't matter to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
you don't think there's anything that universally matters? I do. I got answers. Sorry, I've cut you off so rudely. I want to hear what you were saying.
No, please. I'm speaking from not knowing, and I think I was asking a question.
Oh, so, you were still figuring it out.
The question has already worked because you have something to say.
Okay. It's like I know there are things that give life meaning.
Yes.
Okay. So there are things like understanding things. That gives life a lot of meaning for a lot of people. Working out a problem. You don't even have to be a professor. But that need to understand and to gain knowledge, that can bring people meaning and to bring order to chaos, you know.
Yes.
So understanding, I think, gives a lot of people meaning. And then something else that seems so cliched, it couldn't be true, but it is serving others.
Yeah.
Serving others gives people a lot of meaning. A lot of people. Most people. I don't know whether it's an evolutionary kind of altruism, and it could just be like that we enjoy it. Like, and it feels worthwhile, and humans are social creatures, and that's just how we work, and that's one of our, you know, like fail-safe functions. But that seems to give a lot of people a lot of meaning. I don't think we need to make the question more complicated than it is. You can see it. You can see what gives people meaning. Understanding things and serving others and probably like a lot of other things that are related to that. Maybe like community, trying to be understood, stuff like that.
Mm.
I don't think that life's meaningless. But I just can't, like, my problem is I can't work out the best way to act all the time. Like, sure, those are things that matter, but what's the best way that I can fulfill, you know, whatever gives people meaning in general.
Yeah.
What's my specific way of doing that?
Yeah.
What's the best way for me to gain knowledge? What's the best way for me to serve others? That's, I think, is you know, the question. Yeah. And then I have like a lot of problems with action, like on a broader kind of philosophical level. Like I worry, like when you think about it, if you're trying to be ethical, like all actions eventually affect someone else. And they all actions could potentially be immoral. Like a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
So you can't like necessarily control everything that's going on when you're trying to be a good person. And
yeah. I guess I take the hopefully freeing position that morals are just as arbitrary as everything else.
I mean,
as any other cultural construct. And that's also from a place of not having studied any of this, but it allows me to continue to move and learn and grow, is to know that the thing that I thought was right and the thing that I thought was wrong may need to change. And that it is only in the hardening of positions that people then act from those hardened positions that we end up with absolutes.
Mm-hmm. I think you can have a very strong position. I just think you have to be able to argue for it properly.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, yeah, you do have to be willing to be dynamic in that position when you're presented with opposing evidence. Mm. That's about it, really. Like, I don't think it needs to be more complicated than that.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah.
The thought that I always have is, where did I get this idea from?
Mm.
And why am I holding on to it like my self-identity depends on it?
That's why it's good to dance.
That's why it's good to dance.
We've gone full circle.
Great.
It's like, why are you there like that? Like, yeah. And this can be, and I think there's also something about the motion of the movement that's really freeing. Like,
yeah.
Just something yeah. sort of deeply physical about it. Just
yeah.
Whoosh. I think one of the first movements ever might have been just shaking a bum other than stomping. You know, when yeah. people first started clapping sticks together.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. It feels primal.
Yeah. It feels, what does it feel like? That the mind-body divide is a ridiculous concept that's going yes. to eventually die out.
Yes, thank God.
But for at the moment, we have to live too. Through it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's been a whole movement that we have inherited
mm.
that you can think your way to a new place. And that through the only way to the body is through the mind and through rational, logic, language-based thought.
Right.
But actually a way to the mind and the self is also back through the body. But that has been... But the mind has been privileged.
Yes.
And,
in our...
Yeah, and...
Idea history.
So far, yeah. And then as a philosophy renegade... revolutionary master, you drop some tracks and work.
It was all by accident.
Yeah. Well,
I had an instinct, you know.
Yeah,
this just felt good to me.
Mm.
And I really enjoy making people get out of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like my aim in life, for people to let go of the things that don't matter.
Mm.
And I didn't even know if I was aware of that. I just had an urge to,
like, it was something that you needed, and then
yeah.
other people also ended up needing it.
I don't know if I needed it. I think I just intuitively understand, like, the arbitrary. I sound so wanky.
Can you talk,
like,
to me more about arbitrary, like, how to live through the world and make decisions and take actions
pragmatically
when you're also believing that so many of our systems are completely arbitrary?
Yes.
Is something I haven't worked out, but I am experiencing.
Wait, can you say that again? Sorry. So I just want to be specific.
How you have found
yeah.
is a nice, like, positive outcome and good way to feel and live, way mm. to continue taking steps through life.
Yeah.
Also knowing that so many of our systems and norms are arbitrary.
I have to be pragmatic.
Okay.
I'm a pragmatist.
And what does that look like?
It looks like we've been thrown here, right?
That's nice, yeah.
I didn't think of that. Heidegger thought of that. So,
well, okay. It's like the concrete. Props to Heidegger.
Yeah. Except for being a Nazi, bad Heidegger. Good Heidegger, you're thrown into this existence.
Yes.
And good existentialism. This is our concrete reality, and yeah. we have these various institutions and yeah. norms, and that differ saddeningly throughout the world, so that's even more confusing for you. I guess you just find yourself in this position, and I don't know, I just stumbled across DJing, and dancing seems to be one way that makes people feel, I guess, like, outside of themselves and less, I don't know, to me it's kind of ecstatic and you're, like, de-individuated at that time, and so maybe in a way, like, on a personal level, it's like a protest to those structures. Am am I talking crap? Do you kind of understand?
Yes. And even if I don't understand, I'm excited by it.
Okay. It's sort of like, I don't know.
I really enjoy the idea that we are reminded that we can get such pleasure and transcendence from moments where we let go of individuality.
Right. Yes.
That there must be something to it.
Yes.
There must be.
And it could be an instinct. And I don't have all the answers, but this just, yeah. And you should read Nietzsche, The Birth of Tragedy. And maybe that's also.
Is there a tweet version? Like 140 character snippets?
Oh, God, can I do it? There's like two aspects of like the human spirit. And he means that in the broadest sense of the term, not necessarily religious sense. That are Apollinean and Dionysian, and he thinks that both are necessary to live like a flourish. Well, he thought, because this was his early thought, that both are necessary to live like a meaningful, flourishing existence. And his answer to that was Greek tragedy, because he analyzed it and he saw that it had both elements, like the chorus made people feel de-individuated because they all sung together. And then there were things like the stage and the structure and the script that were more rational, and that was really good. And tragedy itself was really a good release for people. And I think of twerking as a release because it made them realize at once, like we were talking about, like the meaninglessness of existence. Like, why does this hero, why do you care about him, but you do, like, and he's fucked up and everything horrible is happening to him, and it's sort of like this release where you like accept the tragedy of life. Yeah. And mine is sort of, I guess it's not as tragic, but in a sense I think it is. Because often I can feel like really sad after I've been playing, because I'm just like, that felt really good and now I'm back here and that feels tragic. Yeah. Not that I'm not comparing myself to Nietzsche. I'm just like, I'm trying to make links to, you know, my previous intellectual background and, you know, the things we do have meaning. And he's talking about the things that mattered to him at the time and I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah. And at that time he wrote it in words, and right now you're dancing it and singing it and saying it and DJing it. I wonder about...
Yeah. So the Apollinean part of it is like my skill. Like, and I have skills and I have DJ skills, and I know I have like an arc to the evening, which is actually quite intuitive. I don't know how I choose songs. I just read a crowd and I know what they want. The hour before with Fempress, I wasn't able to interact with anyone. I was too busy figuring out, like, looking at the people, figuring out who's there, what they want, what would, like, produce, like, the best, most ecstatic response from everyone. So you can't talk to me like that. But, yeah, I do work on it and what I'm going to play and make decisions.
Can you pull apart a little bit more? Perfectly. About how you work on it?
I make sure like I have a mix of what people know and what they don't know.
Yeah.
So there's that element of like, I don't know, like surprise and mystery, and that's exciting because you can't be completely predictable and ecstatic at the same time. That's not exciting or novel. But then it has to be something that they know in order to charm them and make them feel comfortable. So it's just like this balance. Like, I don't want to completely alienate the crowd with music that I just think is good, or with stuff they don't know and they get bored of. Like, I want to be inclusive with insights and with surprises. And
that's nice.
And so get you excited.
My mate Tim Roxburgh, he's a radio producer at ABC, he talks about a map that we're all living on, this reality map, and everyone's just at a different point in the map.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're meeting somebody, if you want to have an actual engaged conversation. You have to try and work out from what they see, what their viewpoints are, where they are on that map, and then go to that place.
Yeah.
So that when you're standing next to them and you're discussing, you look out and you're seeing the same things and you can understand why the map looks like that.
Does he fall in love a lot? Because, no, sorry. I just mean, like, to me, that's like a very loving thing to do.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I always want to see things. If I'm into someone, that's what I try and do.
Mm.
Try and get their background and be as empathetic as possible and understand like every nook and cranny and see things out from their perspective.
Yeah.
So that if you're looking, both are looking at a sunrise, maybe you can think of that, you know what the other person's thinking about when you're both sharing that experience or something.
Now, I wonder about...
But yeah, is like, that getting away from the point?
No, we're never getting away from the point. I just wonder about satire and sincerity within your actions.
Yeah.
And there's all these thoughts and there's all these actions and they're happening in relationship or not to each other. But they don't seem satirical. They seem sincere to me. But I wanted to ask you. I didn't want to speak on your behalf about that.
I need you to flesh it out a little bit more. So what do you mean everything? Like the DJing, networking, the Facebook presence?
Sounds like listening to you and experiencing FemPress that there was never an irony. There was never a tongue-in-cheek.
No, I don't have time for that. No. And if there is, it's only because... And if I ever express it something that way, it's with a sincere foundation. I haven't given up.
That's nice.
I don't know. I don't see the point. It's not constructive a lot of the time, to be completely ironic. I think in a way it's actually you're trying to alienate yourself from things that matter.
To disown somehow.
And make fun all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm being completely fair in my analysis, but I just don't have time.
You can change your mind in the future or in the past. That's fine.
Yeah. No.
Are you solid on how you want to leave the world better? Is that clear to you?
Yeah, I want people to know that, I don't know, I'm really against this idea of like this elitist notion of the self and that we are all self-sufficient and independent, and it's a really platonic idea. And I think that we're all actually very messy, unguided, vulnerable creatures, and that we all need help.
And also our way to know ourselves is in the reflection of others around us.
Yes.
And so there's not even a way to know yourself, which is independent and self.
Right, and that goes against the Cartesian idea of the mind being, because I didn't know how he was like, all I know is that I exist. And I was like, but there is no I without a contrast to another. Dingbat. And have you ever had a toothache? Yeah. You know you exist when you have a fucking toothache. You don't have to think about that.
That's true.
But yes. Yeah. Friends.
There's an idea pervasive at the moment of the self-made person.
Oh, God. This is a whole nother kettle of fish that I'm very interested in. I feel bad for you that you have to sit here and listen.
Okay. Well, I'll leave as soon as I'm not interested.
Okay.
Okay. Deal. So, the self-made individual identity and the self-knowing.
Oh, yeah.
That's, and that it's bullshit.
It is. Completely. It's like a very American idea. The fact that the American dream exists, to me just serves as like demonstrating that is the dominant, kind of dogma of our time, and it affects people negatively, I think.